Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I'm honored, I tell you, to share the microphone with the most interesting people. Now, these are people who are entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, web developers, just anybody who has wonderful stories to share and who are really excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today, I'm excited. I welcome my friend Tracy C. Jones, also known as Tremendous Tracy, to the podcast. Tracy is the author of 5 books and counting, and she is the president of Tremendous Life Books. Her father, the late Charlie Tremendous Jones, founded Executive Books in 1965 with the goal of changing the world one book at a time. After amassing an exceptional leadership background of her own, Tracy took the company's reins in 2009 after her father passed away and carries on his tremendous legacy today. A former Air Force officer and Gulf War veteran, Tracy's storied career in uniform took her from Roswell, New Mexico, to stations in Germany and England, where she honed her operational expertise and tremendous leadership skills. You see, we use that word tremendous a lot. There's a reason for that. In a number of command roles. She lives in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, and she's a graduate of the New Mexico Military Institute and the Air Force Academy. And before assuming her father's mantle at Tremendous Life Books, Tracy built an impressive career as a corporate fixer. When she talks about her own experiences, she paints with broad, exciting strokes. I love this. Her clashes with company old guards, her battles with entrenched boards, all successful efforts to effect real and lasting change. And with 12 years in the Air Force, another 10 in corporate boardrooms, plus an MBA in global management, and ongoing PhD work today, she puts her tremendous training to work carrying on her father's lifelong mission. And today she's going to share her thoughts and advice on leadership. This is something that has fascinated Tracy. I mean, it had to. She grew up in a household with Charlie Tremendous Jones and people like Zig Ziglar wandering in and out. I mean, she grew up with a lot of great leaders, and she's going to share that with us today. Tracy, good morning, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio.
Thank you so much, Denise. It's a pleasure to be your guest today.
Thank you. And listen, today is Veterans Day, and I want to take a moment before we begin to thank you for your service to our great country.
Well, you are so welcome. I'm honored. I'm always just so humble when people take the time out to thank me, and I want to thank all my past and present and those in the future, too, for just their heart of service. We take so many things for granted, and those of us that have served know that freedom definitely isn't free, and so I'm always so thankful that there are people that just have a heart to serve for something higher than themselves and just enable the amazing life that we have.
Yeah, I worry, and we're going to go a bit off topic, because I have been worried for quite a while about what I view as the deliberate decimation of our military. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to just say right now, I hope that reverses quickly.
I do, too. And, you know, if you've lived a lot of different places in the world, you can tell the people that have and haven't, because everybody assumes we're so messed up and everybody else has it perfect. And it's like, well, you know, nobody has it perfect. And the more you get to experience and live in other cultures, you hit the lottery when you're born in this country in a lot of ways. Do we have a lot of things to do? Yeah. But there's so many other people that just would just love to have the opportunities that we have in this country. And you know, it's important to realize that and not buy into the bashing that goes on, the uneducated bashing.
You know, when I was a child growing up, I was taught in school and by my parents that America was the greatest country in the world, mm-hmm. period, mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. we existed to be helpful to other people
mm-hmm.
and, you know, to be kind of the gold standard. And I don't know what the heck happened, but I'm praying that we reverse that. So,
yes.
Again, thank you for your service.
You're welcome, Denise.
Much appreciated.
I enjoyed my time in. I really did. Taught me a lot.
Well, listen, tell me a bit, you know, the audience. I know a lot about you, but the audience doesn't. And I love the fact that, you know, your father was Charlie Tremendous Jones, and you grew up with, you know, all these big, big names in motivational speaking, and they were just people to you. Do you mind telling a couple, you know, stories real quick before we get started?
Well, absolutely. Well, it was so funny because I tell people growing up with a motivational speaker for a father was a little bit like living a cross between living in a sitcom and boot camp. You know, everything was always funny and humorous and just, you know, you never knew what was going to happen, something comedic and unexpected always, but yet very tough and disciplined. You know, I remember getting my work release papers signed at 14, and we always had jobs and always work and play were always very integrated. You had to have a purpose for what you did, and leisure was okay, but you always had to have something in mind. So he would take me on vacation, on trips with him when he would go and speak, and he'd bring me up to the mic when I was little enough that he could pick me up in his arms, and we'd do this little shtick, as I say, and he'd scoop me up and he'd say, "Tracy, how you doing?" And I'd say, "I'm tremendous." And he'd say, "Well, how are things going?" And I'd say, "Oh, I hope things don't get any better." And he's like, "Well, why is that?" And I'd say, "Because I'm so tired of being happy. It's wearing me out." So I kind of got the bug early on that I just loved. And I would watch him in front of people, and I noticed he was very firm about and very pragmatic about, you know, life is very difficult. It wasn't a bunch of this, flowers and sunshine, and if you wish it, it's going to come to you. It was very hardcore life. But it was also very real and very authentic and very positive that, you know, we're going to get beat up, but that's okay. You know, we got to turn this and be upbeat. So, and I would get and listen to these people, these other wonderful men and women that just were there to share their wisdom and their life skills with other people. And I thought, this is the greatest thing in the world. And I thought, well, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I really still don't, but whatever I do, I just want to be a leader at it. I just want to be really good and help a bunch of people. So that was kind of my experience growing up, and it was very unusual. And the older I get, the more I realize that. But just, you don't appreciate it when you're going through it. You're just like, oh, Dad, just be normal, tone it down. Can't you just? Why can't you be like everybody else? And now I'm like,
I remember
thank
hearing
you, God.
You say that once, and it was like, but that's Charlie Tremendous Jones.
Oh,
of course, you didn't know that. It was just Dad.
No, I was like, why can't he just simmer down, you know? And he couldn't. So, and now I get it. So, but you don't appreciate it when you're young. You know, youth is wasted on the young, they say.
Isn't it, though? I look back and go, oh, man, Denise, really? And then I go, okay, don't beat yourself up. Learn from it.
I know.
Oh, man.
That's why I was talking to somebody yesterday.
Cycle.
Exactly. I said I'm a recovered knucklehead, because they were talking about their son that's, you know, finally getting his act together, and I said, well, I was one of those too. So as long as we're making progress and advancing, you know, you're right. Don't beat yourself up.
Exactly. No, but I look back at some of the look, talk about knuckleheads. I mean, young people are so darn arrogant. And we're too stupid to know it. You know, we didn't know how
arrogant
we were.
But that's part of it. It's a lack of self-awareness. And
exactly.
And then you get older and you go, oh my gosh, you thought you knew it all, and that's just the stage in life we all go through. And then our brains fully form, you know, the frontal, you know, cerebral cortex and the front rational stuff, and then you kind of realize you grow up, and it's a beautiful thing. But we've all been there. We've all been at that status, that kind of lesser evolved status, and you know, it's just a rite of passage.
Well, listen, you won a big award yesterday, and I was reading your notes, you know, about the from the
acceptance. Oh, yeah.
I can do this. I can. I recorded, just so y'all know, I recorded a summit this morning. I've been talking all morning long. I'm tripping over my own tongue. I have no idea why. So
put the cats on. Let
me
talk to the cats.
Oh, that's another thing. As soon as we get off the phone, I've got to talk to you about them. They're driving me nuts.
But absolutely. I'm here to help.
I've got two little kittens for the audience. I've got two kittens, and one of them, we're going to talk about leadership here, honestly. One of them, I swear, is watching his brother going, it's okay, go in the fridge, she'll get you out. It's okay, go in the dryer, she'll get you out.
Oh.
It's okay, get stuck in the armoire, she'll get you out. I've noticed that one of them is always in trouble and the other one's always standing there looking. So there's some leadership going on, and I don't like what I'm seeing in terms of leadership with these two. This morning he walked into the oven. It's like, dude, no.
Oh,
no. Anyway, but it's, you know, there's leadership everywhere. And I was reading your notes from your acceptance speech, and you talked about three things that I think are very, very important. Leadership is about learning. Leadership is about serving. Leadership is about connecting. And I would love for you to take those points one by one and explain what you were talking about in this speech. And if you want to tell people where this speech was, I would love for you to.
Sure. Well, there's a group here, and there are several in the area. The one that I was recognized yesterday was a group called Leadership Cumberland. And we have Leadership Harrisburg in the area, but I'm in South Central Pennsylvania. And it's an organization that it's almost like a finishing school. It brings in people from throughout the area. You sign up, and I do believe the program is about a year long. And once a month you get together and you go to various, be it the Harrisburg Senators or baseball team or some of the not-for-profits or some of the bigger organizations, and you tour them and you connect with other business, political, academic leaders in the area to see how we can better support one another. And then at the end they graduate from that, but it's wonderful because you get to see leadership from all different industries and all different walks of life, and it's a wonderful way to get connected. So they have twice a year where they recognize leaders, and they notified me a couple months ago that they had voted on the process and reviewed and wanted to recognize me as a local area leader. So I'm always like, oh my gosh, it just means the world to me, because I think I'm active and I'm tenacious. Am I getting anything right? I mean, I'm never really sure about that, but if you define leadership in terms of just keeping on and doing the best you can, yes, I can say that I actually do that. So they gave me just a beautiful award, and it was the West Shore Country Club and so many of the people that I love and are why I'm still here today and doing what I do were there, and my mom was there, who's going to be 90 in January, and it couldn't have been a nicer day. And they gave me just this most gorgeous trophy and about 10 minutes to kind of just share my thoughts on what leadership was. So as you had said, it was learning, serving, and connecting. And, you know, the one thing is with leadership, if you're not constantly reading, going to school, online learning things, hearing different speakers, TED Talk, whatever, I mean, school is always in session. And things are changing so rapidly. I recently read in a book called Do-It-Yourself University, which really was a great look at, should we even be sending kids to college? So many of them aren't making it through, and all they leave with is a huge pile of debt. Something's not right. What is not right? And they were talking about how we keep looking to the past for what worked in the past, and how at the speed of technology and globalization and with the new world order, everything is completely different now. And I'm going to talk a little bit about school because I'm a big proponent of school, but at the right time when you're ready for it. And one of the comments in the books was that 45% of the preschoolers alive today will work in industries that have not even been invented yet. But yet, if we as business owners and employers and creators and visionaries and shapers of the future, if we keep just looking back to how it used to be done old school, and Denise, you know, the marketers do it one way and the advertisers will tell you and how to launch a book is one way, but that's all what worked in the past. But everything is changing at the speed of light. So really, leadership, you know, we talk about strategic plans and say, well, what are you going to be 3, 5, and 10 years down the road, when tomorrow is going to be vastly different than what it was today? So it's kind of, we got to kind of get out of what we used to do with our old strategic ways of thinking and really look to the future. And I am in school, as you had mentioned, for a doctoral program, and it's just incredible to be, you know, I've got 30 years in five different industries, so all different things and continuing different roles. So my experience bag is rich, but I'm still reading this stuff and thinking, oh, my goodness, if I would have known that 20 years ago, or, oh, my gosh, that's why I can't get this this team to really reach this level. It's just amazing to keep learning different things. And I had shared a lot of different things that I had learned just even in the past 18 months of going to school that I had not even thought about. And one of the greatest books I read just the last couple months, and probably a lot of our audience has read it, is Kotter's Leading Change. And it went through the whole process of how leading change is vastly different than managing change. And I had to look at myself and say, you know what? The vast part of my career has been managing change. And that's not going to get you where it was. And I'm painfully well aware of that. I mean, there were a lot of good things, but was I really leading change? And, you know, again, don't beat yourself up. Excellence is about doing the best that you can with where you are right there, and that's exactly what I did. But had I not continued the education process, I would still be helping folks with based on what I knew worked some of the time and some of the time it didn't. So it's just fascinating to continue to be learning this. There's also an awful lot of study in neuroscience and retraining your brain and mental plasticity. And researchers are saying now, if you don't continue to expand your brain, and I don't mean just leisure, you know, playing golf or taking vacations, I mean learning. By the age of 85, there's a 50-50 chance you'll go senile. So it's just imperative that no matter our age, we stay active. Again, I have a mother who's going to be 90 in about 6 weeks, and she is still hip and active and studying and reading and coloring books and sewing. And, you know, I got a lot to do in my next couple of decades on this planet. So I was laughing because when I was in the Air Force, I worked on fighter jets, and I drew the analogy between the Top Gun when Maverick would say to Goose, I feel the need for speed. And I said, now I say, I feel the yearn to learn. And so I just, I'm hungry all the time for new thoughts, great ideas, sharpening conversations, brilliant conversations with other people that kind of push the envelope, challenge me to rethink some of my things. And it's just That's the first thing really leadership is all about, is lifelong learning. And if as a leader you're like, nope, I'm done, I'm not learning anymore, then you need to hang up your leadership mantle because everything's changing. And it used to change a lot before, but now it's just, you know, the unprecedented speed at which things are changing are just beyond belief.
Oh, it's insane. And one thing, we have a lot in common, but one big thing that you and I have always had in common is that we're voracious readers. We started very young. We've never stopped. And I think that that has a lot to do with how we learn and how we teach.
Yes. And for the listeners that say, well, I don't really like to read, that's okay. It like any other talent, is something that – and read the things that interest you. Don't you know, just digest what somebody else says you have to read this. You know, half the stuff I read, I really pore over, and the other half I kind of skim and say, that was all right. But you can, and it's a discipline, and it's not easy, especially if you have not been using your brain to stay focused and critically think in quite some time. You're going to have to rewire your brain to kind of be able to tune out the noise and really concentrate and focus and try and process. Because processing, reading, is difficult to do.
It is. And going back to something you said right at the top of the show about, do we even send our kids back to college? Mm-hmm. Look, I was having this conversation with my mother. We were watching the election. Well, she was watching it. I don't have cable. So I was Twittering and Facebooking and getting the news on the Internet. We were doing this on opposite ends of the country. So, you know, we were trading information back and forth, and we got to talking about reading and education. And she loves school. I hated it. I have never been so bored in my life, literally. Mm-hmm. I found school incredibly tedious because I really felt then and do now that I probably knew more than the teachers. I read more than they did. Mm-hmm. But then when I went back to college later, you know, later in life, and I had to pay for my own degree,
yes.
Then I got real interested real quick, and I worked my fanny off.
Yep.
But I'll tell you, that first 3 weeks, I was pretty sure I was going to die. Pretty sure.
Yeah, it does.
The fourth week,
I remember,
I was like, oh, I got this.
Yeah. You get it. And you just have to stay organized. That's the biggest thing with school. And when you're young, I was the biggest procrastinator, unorganized knucklehead of all. But when you get older, you hopefully learn better organization skills, and then anything broken down into small tasks is doable. And, I mean, I love school now, but, yeah, I was not a stellar student in my undergrad years. It took me 7 years to get my undergrad. I mean, it was not pretty, but you know, I think there's
but
a time for it. I did, but I love school, because what I like about school is I think it teaches you reading and writing skills and Lord willing, critical thinking skills that you don't inherently get unless you're taking in and reading a lot of different viewpoints and information. You don't get that. So that in and of itself. Now, do you have to go to college for that? No. You know, Jim Rohn's great quote, my dad flunked out of school in the eighth grade. I went to school because I had the opportunity and somebody paid for it. So that's why I went to school. But Jim Rohn's quote is, formal education will make you a living, self-education will make you a fortune, or something to that. And so just because you can't or you don't feel your college material, you can get your education lots of other ways. You couldn't in the past, but you sure can now. And that's why, you know, this cookie cutter, well, you need to go to school. Do you? With the availability of everything, and I'm not anti-schools. I'm going to a doctoral program. But, you know, I'm more aware now that you have to want it. Otherwise, don't waste your time going if you don't want it, because you're going to be wasting every.
Oh, I agree.
If you're going to the state and you're getting a scholarship, you're wasting taxpayer money if you don't really want it. And so, but if you want it, by all means, you go for it, because it is a wonderful thing to have, and I'm proud of going to school. But I wouldn't tell anybody. Don't let that define you. But I tell a lot of people that have regrets about not finishing degrees, what's stopping you? I mean, with the online stuff now, it's incredible. It's incredible. You can get whatever you want.
I think it's MIT. In fact, I'm almost positive it's MIT. I was at a client who was a professor. She passed away recently, but she worked in the cognitive program over there, and I'm almost positive it's MIT that has a lot of online courses for free.
They do. That's
no
in this book, Do It Yourself University. DIYU
right.
talks about MIT, and people are just loading their stuff up now. And now, why school costs have gone up 50 times more than every other cost is another discussion, and I'm not in academia, so I can't answer that. But they do talk about that. You are correct. It was MIT that does that. So just start learning. I mean, you don't have to formally go to school if you can't swing it, but just keep learning. And like I said, not just sitting there reading fiction, nothing against fiction, but I mean, you know, learning, growing your brain, learning new things is what's going to keep you figuring out how to live like better, and to the second point, learning how to be a better service to others.
And that leads me to my next question, which is about service. But I saw, just a brief aside here, I saw somewhere Breitbart or one of the news services that I think this man was 93 years old and he'd just finished up a degree.
Yeah.
And they were saying, I mean, I was just sitting there going, oh, I wanted to grab him and hug him. It's like, oh, my
That's
gosh.
Awesome.
You can do it anytime. You know,
yeah.
If you keep your brain active, and I think that's why neuroplasticity and neuroscience, I think this is why they're saying now, learn to do something that you just never thought you could do. Learn to speak another language.
Right.
You can be 60 years old and pick up another language. It is going to exercise your brain, and you need that.
Right.
My problem
and it
is I don't have enough time to learn everything. I'm constantly
busy.
I've got to go do that.
Yeah. You're staying mentally challenged in a good way in other aspects, and you know it's just one of those things too. But it's like going back to the gym after you haven't been in 10 years. It's hard, but you look at those people that started and post their picture 2 years later. It's a complete transformation. You can do the same
little
thing mentally. Yep,
baby
same
steps.
Thing mentally.
Exactly right.
Yep. Yep.
So let's talk about serving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how is leadership about serving?
Well, if you're not serving as a leader, you're a megalomaniac. Because it's really just all about you. Leaders are nothing without their followers, and the followers are, the goal is for the leader to be there for them and then to be there for the leader. So there's this kind of dual side of the coin. And leadership is really about, it's the difference you make in someone's life, and even if it's just one, and even if it's your own. I think a lot of times we evaluate leaders on, well, how many hits on their YouTube channel, how many books have they sold, how many big name clients do they have, how fast are they growing, are they on the cover of Success Magazine, and you know, that's nice, but that's kind of the worldly metric. You can be a leader in your own world if you are living a life of service. And if you're not living a life of service, then you're not leading. So there's two programs that I have as an extension of Tremendous Leadership, which of course revolve around the transformative power of books. And the first is the Four-Legged Leadership Program, which is where I take my rescue dogs, who are best-selling authors, who have written books to elementary and preschool audiences, and I teach them life lessons on obedience and self-esteem and financial literacy and how to lead your pack and get a second leash on life. And, you know, it is so great to get young people at that 5 through ages 10 and share with them these core life principles about attitude and work ethic and being kind and continuous learning, because the earlier you learn it, the better, the more great years you can have. And we all know how hard it is for us to change once we get older. We get set in our ways. And I read an article recently, it was called Change or Die, and they were talking about the health care crisis. And what they were saying is that 20% of the patients is what jacks up all the health crisis costs, the health care costs. And what they say is that when these people hit the proverbial, you're going to die if you don't do this, only 1 in 9 will actually change. Now, that is scary. That shows us how entrenched we are.
Just 1 in 9?
1 in 9. It's an article called Change or Die.
So you're basically getting a death sentence, and you're going, yeah, okay, I'll do it later?
And we know people. I have a brother that died last year from addiction.
I know.
You're going to die. You're going to die. I know, but that's the point. We watch people that are in their own misery or disease or addiction or whatever, and or smoking or with a habit that's just really or a vice or a lie or that's just eating them from the inside out, and they won't stop. And so it's not in us. Change is something we really struggle with. But when you're younger, you're formative. So let's put those seeds in now so it's not something radical that you don't do this learned helplessness or, well, that's just the way it is. And, I walk in there with those kids walking down the hall and they have their little ties on and they're swaggering and they know they're about to be, up on stage and the kids are screaming and the dogs are strutting and I'm just in heaven. It is just so much fun to teach these wonderful leadership principles to this future generation of leaders and to interact with the teachers and the principals and the school administrators that just see such tremendous value in early childhood character development. It's just amazing.
Now, are you getting, I know you are, but what is some of your favorite feedback from some of the children?
Oh, just
because I know you used to go with Mr. Blue, who has sadly passed, and now Roscoe the Rascal, we need to talk about him. He's got a book coming out, Roscoe the Rascal.
He does?
I love that. And, I mean, how do these kids, what are some of the best things that kids have said to you that's had you just clutching your heart going, oh, this is what it's all about?
Well, what they say is just they'll either share a story, like I'll be sharing about encountering a bully or being kind to someone, and they'll relate what they've seen in their lives kind of thing. Or we talk about, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, give that dog a bone or continuous learning. And, boy, you better be an engaging speaker, because kids will yell out. If you're not good, they'll yell out, you're not good. You got to, and it's a lot of stream of consciousness stuff, because they'll just raise their hand and you'll call on them and they're like, no, I just wanted to raise my hand. So it's pretty hysterical. It is, but the stuff they get, or they'll show a story about a sibling. But the funniest thing was, I was talking about, they were all sitting there, and sometimes I'll say, do you ever know somebody that isn't happy all the time, or somebody that doesn't do their part of the work. And inevitably, I forget they're not adults, and I don't expect them to, like, point at somebody or yell somebody's name out. And inevitably, I have to catch myself and say, no, don't, just think to yourself. So you don't have to name somebody, because, and it's like, oh my gosh, I just bust out laughing. But you know, they're just the wonderment as they're sitting there looking at the illustrations, and you know, we're really drilling down the points of, well, what do you do if somebody comes into your room that looks different than you? How do you get to know them? Or do you recognize, how do you save money to earn something that you want to buy? And you can see the little brains going through, and then the feedback we get afterwards, I mean, I'm like a local celebrity now. I mean, parents and kids come back and they're like, is this where Indigo lives? You know, forget me. You know, I'm like, yes, this is the house of Indigo. And they're like, or is this the dog that saved Christmas? And I'm like, yeah, this is where he lives, you know. And so it's almost, it really makes a great impression on them. And I mean, children, books, literacy, dogs. These are things that make the world go round, and we can all agree on, regardless of whatever else we disagree on. So it's a wonderful chance for us to come together for something really precious and life-changing.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's not just children you work with. You also have a literacy program in prisons.
Oh, yeah. So it's kind of funny because some days I go from elementary schools, you know, the most darling little innocent, lighthearted, bright-eyed, full of wonderment and innocence beings, and then I go to the state penitentiaries where probably about a third of these men are in for life for really bad things. And we do the same thing. We have a monthly book club where we read a book on personal development, and like I said, sometimes it's more lighthearted, like my father's book, Life is Tremendous, about having an enthusiastic attitude. And then, you know, we've done some heavier stuff like Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, which is pretty apropos for guys behind bars, because Viktor Frankl talks about how finding purpose in living life when he was in Auschwitz in the concentration camps. How do you find your reason for living or purpose in life when you're faced with, you know, hell on earth? And so watching those guys, and I was there Wednesday up at SCI Mahane, and there's a group of about 18, and I've been with them with about 7 months now. And we're reading Zig Ziglar, and we're reading Og Mandino, and we're reading heavy personal development stuff and sales and management and leadership. But they are leaders in their communities in these correctional facilities, and they have a strong faith, and a lot of them are mentors to the other inmates, and they guide the young, because some of these guys have been in 45 years. So they take the younger guys and they guide them as mentors, and the awakening now of what they know, and you can see it in their eyes. And it's not a sad thing like, oh if only I would have known, but it's more like I can't believe I now can find value in my life. And even if it's behind bars, they have a peace and a contentment about it. And to watch them grow through the power of books is just, it is one of the most profound things that I have ever seen. Because here we are on the outside, and I can't, even if I give people $1 million, I can't get them to read. But yet these guys behind bars are so focused on making themselves better. It's just such a weird dichotomy, and it just it's an interesting look into human nature and what's going on.
Now, do you find that when you get there, some of them can't read? Because I know that illiteracy is a huge, huge problem.
I
sadly,
thought that would be
adults.
The case. Yeah, I thought that would be the case. But no, these guys are pretty good. And like I said, Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning is not an easy read. But no, they're strong readers. And we'll go around and some will want to read out loud. And I let them know, you know, and if I have the Spanish, the book in Spanish, I'll bring that. But it's primarily English. And, you know, they just come because of the positivity, the sense of community, and that's kind of the third point, and then just to share and hear each other's thoughts. But it's remarkable to hear the quality of comments and critical thinking skills. And that's one of the other things. A lot of these guys just believed what anybody would tell them, whether it was an abusive adult or it was negativity or you'll never be good enough or you'll never get out of this area of living. And now they realize that they find their own information and they come to their own conclusions. And that, too, is quite a powerful thing because, and again, that's why we continue to learn, because there's so much stuff we learn at 20 that we have to relearn at 30 and 40 and 50. And, you know, we've got enough years behind us now that everything that we thought we knew a little bit of, but we keep relearning it in a new way. And to watch them get to that point is pretty amazing. So it's the one highlight for me. I can have been on the most horrible week of my life, but I will go in there and it's 2 hours of just pure, unadulterated, just community and fellowship and thinking and growing together. And you don't get that a lot. So I got to go behind bars to get it.
You're right. It's an interesting dichotomy. Although I was recently, we have the Angola prison here, which is a huge prison. It's, I think, 18,000 acres. It's on the side of an old plantation. And you would not think that these two words would go together, but it is a beautiful place. It's a beautiful mm-hmm. prison. Mm-hmm. And they have this rodeo every October, the last Sunday, well, each Sunday in October, and I go every year without fail. And they have the big, you know, big area where the prisoners do crafts, but this plantation, this prison, they work. Everyone in that prison, if they are able-bodied, mm. they work. Now, they're not forced to, but they work the farm. They grow, you know, their own feed. They have their own gardens. You know, they have workshops. It's a gorgeous place. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you look at these prisoners. You can mingle with them in the crafts area, and a lot of them are lifers, no question about it.
Yep.
But they're on those horses. They're raising Percherons. They're so proud of themselves.
Yes.
Because
they now have
a purpose.
They do, and they show up, and they're in their Department of Corrections garbs,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are pressed crisper than when I was in the military, and they're
mm-hmm.
groomed. They have pride in how they look, and they take care of themselves, and I spoke to a group who fundraises, so they fundraise within the prison by selling, like, donated candy and syrups, and then they donate to charitable organizations, and here are these guys donated $300 to the Kosovo Leadership Academy after they heard I visited it. So, you know, the point is leaders can help anyone all over the world, and even if they're behind bars. So it's a neat thing that you're getting to experience that too.
Well, what I have always found interesting about going to this rodeo, because, you know, you can buy into any kind of stereotype, whatever's fed to you through your cable, which I don't have.
Yep.
I hate cable. But, you know, I guess
no, it's awful.
My view,
yeah.
Oh, it's terrible. The garbage that comes in your living room is just horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I always had this kind of view of, like, okay, they're all big and they're bulked up and they're sitting around reading law books and, you know, they're tattooed and they're mean looking. And let me tell you something, the prisoners at Angola Prison Rodeo look like average people. Some of them are a little chubby and pudgy, and some are not, but you don't see a bunch of beefed up, bald-headed, tattooed guys. You just don't. They're too busy working.
Yeah.
You know, to sit around and pump iron, and, you know, you get to talking with them. I watched one prisoner. His kids were there, and he's a trustee, and I asked him about it later, but his kids were there, and he was playing on the grass and swinging them around, and they were having so much fun. It's not what you expect to see when you go to a prison.
I know,
but they have
a
huge literacy program there as well, and I think that has a lot to do. Plus, you know, they get up and work. They take a lot of pride in their work. And if you don't have pride, if you don't have knowledge, what the heck do you have?
You don't have anything. And you go up, you get released back into society. You don't have the means to support yourself, so you therefore turn to a life of crime and wind up right back in there. Or your self-esteem is so low, you fall prey to people that will use you. So, you know, like you said, once you have a work ethic and pride that, no, I'm going to do this right, and you have a head on your shoulders so you can make a living, that's when you're okay to go out and be a productive member of society. Otherwise, it's just a matter of time because they can't survive on the outside.
Sadly, a lot of people who are on the outside are seeming to have a hard time. And truly, I think if you're not a reader, there's something, you're short-circuiting something. And I don't have the words for it, but if you have not taught yourself to read or don't enjoy reading, you're really missing something. I mean, you really are.
Right.
Right. And, you know, to go back to books, I mean, you know, how we're constantly learning. I was sitting on the floor surrounded by my parents' books. I would pull them off the bookshelves by the fireplace. And, you know, these were books like Guy de Maupassant and Edgar Allan Poe. It's a lot of things I probably should not have been even looking at when I was a very young child. I didn't care. I picked up all kinds of stuff. I picked up anything and read it. And I can go back now, and I don't know about you, but I read books over and over again.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have thousands of books, but I tend to go back to some that I just keep reading them. And every time, you know, maybe a year, maybe two, but I'll go back and read a book. It's like, oh, I didn't see that the last time. I learn something new every single time I pick up and reread a book.
Yes, yes. Beautiful things. We're changing, and they're changing us, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah,
you know, with
so.
Muhammad Ali has that quote that the man who views the world the same at 50 as he did at 20 has just wasted the last 30 years of his life. And that is the honest truth. We should constantly be growing and relooking and seeing things differently because we ought to be changing and evolving on a daily basis.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, connecting. I think the third point, did we cover leadership is about connecting?
Well, yeah, and I, this is the one that I have finally just learned. In the past year, I've learned this, and I learned this because I finally read a book that it finally got through to me, even though I knew. But, you know, for people like me that kind of tend to be independent and know I'll do it on my own or sometimes a little bit maybe too proud if something goes wrong to ask for help, and we tend to be strong, we fall into this gap of thinking that we can do it on ourselves and we'll just be the lonely leader. And, you know, my dad always told me that one of the prices of leadership that you pay is loneliness. And no doubt leadership is truly very lonely. However, a leader should never be alone, and that you really cannot get clarity on anything without your community. And that means the guiding coalition, the people that are around you that want your success more than you do. You know, in Henry Cloud's book, The Power of Others, he has this quadrant four relationships. And these are the people that got your back, are going to tell you what you need to hear, and are gonna be your biggest cheerleaders and supporters. And so without that sense of connecting and community, we're so limited. You know, we're a body, and we're all different organs in the body. But if, like, a lung goes out on its own, it can't survive. But yet if it's in the community of the organism, the organization, then it gets to flourish and be a part of something greater. So that's one thing I've really, you know, Warren Bennis has a great quote. He says, none of us is as smart as all of us. So, you know, surround yourself by those great people that, like I said, that'll help you with a sense of urgency, that'll help you follow through, help you get clarity, and help you achieve your vision. And that's really what leader, because there is no leader that does it on their own. Zero. Even if you look in the Bible, the Trinity is a triune, is an organization, the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. So even God himself is an organization. So if God can't do it on his own, then who are we to think that we can do it on our own? And if you don't believe in God and you can do it on your own, anybody alive knows how all interconnected we are. And so the more we connect with these people that are going to help us unite and get stronger, the more we're going to change, and the more we change, we're going to grow, and the more we grow, we can be a greater service. So that's one of the last things is leader. It's not just about networking. You know, I think, well, how connected are you? Meaning, who can you introduce me to help me get what I want? That's like trading or using people for your good. But I mean, really, the network of, you know, together, it's like nets and a rope. Okay, the more we can connect, the bigger our rope of influence, and we can reach out and we can be some more supportive for other people. I like that analogy. Otherwise, we're just a bunch of strings crisscrossing the planet, and we can't really support anything and lift it up together. But when we connect, then we form this network that can do more for more people. And, of course, in blessing others, then we ourselves are blessed, and that's how we really grow as leaders.
I love what you said about, you know, leadership is lonely. I'm an introvert. I'm a committed introvert. In fact, I'm about 98% of the way to being a total hermit. I'm, you know, closing that gap quick. But I had to learn the hard way that I cannot do it all on my own. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't matter how efficient I am, you know, how good I am at things, I cannot do it on my own. And that was tough for me to learn, I have to tell you. That was a lesson that was years
me
in the
too.
Making.
Yep.
It's like, gee, you knucklehead. I mean, you know, you do the facepalm like, Denise, really? You'd know this.
No, I do.
You know, earlier.
Yeah, and I think as women, we're like, well, no, we're the one that people rely on. So we are stronger in that so many people pull from us. So we're used to being, no, we have to be here for everybody else. But no. We have to let our guard down and be transparent and clean out the crap and really hone in on the good people. Because if people aren't edifying us, we can't pour ourselves out into the lives of other people. So we get drained really, really quick if we only look at pouring out and not kind of recharging with other people.
And once I learned that, and of course, when I first started my business, literally if this was back in dial-up days, remember that little sound, and then you would finally hear the little beep, and you were online, and I mean, it was crazy. You know, websites were very rudimentary affairs. They had maybe one picture and a solid background with a white text. I mean, they weren't much. And this is, you know, when I started building websites, I was working in HTML, hypertext markup language. There really wasn't anywhere near the level of support or mentoring or coaching or YouTube videos. It didn't exist.
Yeah.
You can find, but critical thinking is important here. You can find anything on the internet, but, you know, employ that critical thinking skill and then learn. I mean, I wish all this had been available to me, but it wasn't.
Yes.
So I think that probably made me a bit stronger, and I created a business that is very, very strong because I wasn't waffling around going, oh, well, she did it that way or he did it that way. I just used my own common sense and did it, and I'm grateful for that. But now these days I'm like, oh, let me Google that. I'll find out. I can go get an answer from there. I will research it. I will form an opinion, but I can get 20 answers in, you know, 20 seconds.
Yes.
And then I just have to sort through what am I looking for? What's the right one for me?
Well, you got
no
that
lack
right.
for opportunity these days is what I'm saying, but there was no one to connect with.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. It was lonely, and I don't know that lonely is the right thing because I am an introvert. I live in my head most of the time. Loneliness is not something that I'm really familiar with. But if I were any kind of an introvert, I would have been miserable.
Right. Well,
I mean,
I'll tell you what.
Extrovert, rather. I am an introvert.
Well, I, and I'm an extrovert, but I'll tell you what. I still, had I not read this book, I still would rather do it all alone. It's something in me that I just am, and but it's not right for us because we need the input. Yeah, and that's my thing. I would much rather do it on my own. That way, that's a whole lot less headaches I have to deal with. But that's not the way we're supposed to be. And, you know, we think we know it all, but we don't. And there's so many other people out there that have, and it's kind of arrogant, really, when you think, well, I'll figure it out on my own. Well, yeah, you probably can, but there's probably a lot of other people that have already done this that you can go to provide you some assistance or discernment or clarity. And that's my thing. I'll do all the work in the world, but I think having a community helps you gain clarity. Because like you know, trying to find out what you're really good at, we think we know, but then you get people from the outside that say, you know what, Denise, I know you think you're really good at this, but this is where I see your talents really lie. And you get people that have those honest conversations with you that say things to you that all of a sudden you're like, I never would have known that had somebody not said that to me. So that's the beauty of that's really the beauty of community. You know, we're all responsible for our individual actions. So I'm a big believer in, you know, you and you alone. However, I really have been much more open to, you know, the influence and the power of others.
Oh, me too. I mean, I posted something on Facebook the other day that, you know, about being creative. Listen, I never considered myself to be a creative person. I'm not artistic in the tiniest bit. You ought to see my hangman figures. He looks like he has spina bifida. They're bad.
That, yeah.
They're really bad. I couldn't draw a straight line if you paid me $100 to do it. But over time, people say, oh, my God, you know, you are so creative. Really? I don't know why I didn't think I was.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I am. I'm massively creative. I just didn't know it until people started pointing it out to me, which that's kind of interesting to me. Yeah.
Yes. Isn't that neat? Or people see something you're passionate about that you're like, you just took it for granted. And there's so many things we sell ourselves short on because we're like, well, and I used to think, oh, if it's not really difficult, it's not your life calling. No. If it comes naturally to you, then that's your life's calling. So I was like, but no. And so there's all these things that I was close but no cigar on, and had I not read a book and books can be a wonderful community because let's face it, unfortunately, you're probably going to have more negative others than you do positive others. But books, there's no shortage of an infinite number of positive others. So, if you're in a space where your network really isn't that good yet, boy, like I said, with information and technology and friending people virtually, you can really expand your community to be something very, very strong.
Listen, that's exactly why I started this podcast all those years ago, because I was, I live in a small town in rural, southwest Louisiana. I don't go out of the house if I can avoid it.
I know, me too.
My litter. I mean, seriously. Once I figured out that Walmart could deliver my cat food and litter, I'm like, oh, right. I was so happy. But the thing is, I found that I really did need to speak to people who were not necessarily in my industry, but people who had great things to say and wisdom and tips and advice. And yet once I started doing my podcast every Friday since 2009, I meet the greatest people. I really do. So, and I won't give it up. I mean, it's just the best way to, if you don't have community, it's easy. It's easy, easy. Reach out to people online. One thing about entrepreneurs like you and I, we're very, very generous with our time. If people reach out, we're going to help them if we can. If they have a question or they need like a little bit of advice, we're like, sure, how can I help? Mm-hmm. Never be afraid to approach somebody like us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay, so let's talk about Roscoe's new book. First of all, tell Roscoe's story.
Well, Roscoe, I have had four dogs throughout my life. Mr. Blue crossed over the Rainbow Ridge 2 years and 3 months ago. Worst day of my life. The world is still a very different place. So for those of you that have lost that once-in-a-lifetime dog, my heart goes out to you. However, we press on. But Roscoe, after Mr. Blue passed, Mr. Blue was from Texas, Austin, Texas, and he was this Basset Australian Shepherd mix. So to honor Mr. Blue, I got online on Pet Finder and searched for a Texas-born rescue that was part Basset. So this Southern Comforts rescue came up, and I saw this beautiful kind of spitzy-looking, kind of wild-looking Brillo-haired white dog. And I inquired about her, and they said, well, she's already been adopted, but she had 8 puppies, and we're adopting them out. So anyways, I said, okay, and they said, oh, I don't know if you can hear them in the back. They're upset about somebody. Somebody's knocking at the door or something.
I hear that.
You hear? And so anyways, they were sitting there, and they said, okay, here's this one, and he is the most calm and the most intelligent. And I said, oh, yeah, that sounds like the one for me. And they said he was a Springer Spaniel Basset mix. Now, I know Springer Spaniels, and I know Bassets, and I thought, oh, that's lovely. So I saw a little picture of him, and then he flew from Dulles, from Houston, directly into Dulles, and I picked him up. And anyways, so when I picked him up at the airport, he was just sitting there. He was 13 weeks old. It was the 4th of July, and they opened the cage, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, he kind of looks like he's got some terrier in him. And so I was like a little stressed out because the only terrier I knew was my friend's terrier Guinness, who was Jack Russell, and that dog was crazy. And
they're
so
nuts.
I'm like, oh,
they are.
I know, and I'm like, I got cats. What am I going to do? I just flew this dog across the country. And rescues are always good. It wouldn't have worked out. So I brought Roscoe in, and, of course, I had Indigo and Ruby Red. And here I think he's part Airedale or Schnauzer and Basset. So he's like he's long and low, but definitely terrier. So here I've had Australian Shepherd, Shelties, Indigos part Sheltie, you know how they're like sweet little demure things, corgis,
right.
You know, fun smart breeds. So I got this terrier thing, and I'm like, oh my gosh! And I've never had a dog that chewed up more and was so into mischief. And I was yelling, no, Roscoe, like 200 times. I couldn't nap. Like I went for 3 months and I couldn't nap. And I was like, I'm gonna have a nervous breakdown because this dog I had to keep an eye. This puppy, he was just wild, and so. He came out.
I remember when you
year.
Went to pick him up, and I've watched this ever since. It's like, Tracy, you don't know this, but you got sold a bill of goods.
I did get sold, but, you know, thank God, because if I went
He's
and out.
He's the sweetest dog, though.
Yeah, he is. But terriers are so smart and so independent. And not that I'm not good with dogs, but you know, you had to prove yourself the alpha. He wasn't just going to give it to you. And I was not used to that. I'm like, this mommy says this. So anyways, it was time for him to write a book. And I thought, he turned two, and now he's just the most magnificent, self-assured. He's still a little squirrely, but I love him. And he's got the head the size of a pumpkin, big old head for that big old brain. And so I said, you know what? His book, because all the dogs inspire their own books. And I said, you know what, this is going to be for the terrible twos, the kids ages 2 to 4, where you're feeling your independence and you don't think the rules apply to you. So the book is called No, Roscoe by Roscoe the Rascal. And it's a story about how Roscoe gets adopted into his new pack, but there's one problem. He's a rascal. And can Roscoe learn to follow the rules before it's too late? So it's all about, all inspired by the stories of all the naughty things he did when he was growing up here, and how for hopefully children will learn that, you know, following the rules isn't to crush your spirit, but it's to keep you safe and sound. And so I won't tell how it ends up, but it's a happy ending.
Well, he hasn't quite grown up, because I know he ate your Halloween decorations.
He did. Well, they were clean.
I'm sorry, I
ghost.
Wasn't laughing.
But I could put a turkey in my car with them in the back seat, and they wouldn't touch it. I mean, that's how good my dogs are. And then I got Roscoe. And I just was not used to having to pick up shoes and stuff and beds getting ripped apart, because none of my dogs ever did that. And so, you know, it was like, what is this? And, you know, but I know there's people that have had it a lot worse than me. So I'm not complaining.
But, you know, I love that he's able to inspire a book about, you know, the corollaries between children behavior and a dog behavior. I've got a kitten right now, like I mentioned at the top, that, you know, these two kittens are four months old. I'm not sure. I'm too old to be a pet mommy. I'm too old
I
to
know.
Be a mommy. That's just, you know, I'm like, what was I thinking?
We're grandparents. We're not parents. Yeah.
I know. It's like, what the heck? And, of course, these babies came into my life 11 days after my ginger cat passed away, and it just serendipity just happened that way.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'll look to the ceiling and say, Henderson, what were you thinking when you sent them here?
I know.
Because they're fun, but I have to stay on my toes, which is a good thing. Yeah. It's easy
it is
to
a
get good.
It is.
Listen, it has been wonderful chatting with you. I love your stories. I love your leadership. I love tremendous leadership, period. And anybody who's listening to us, go to tremendousleadership.com. She's got, you tell what you've got over there. You've got this tremendous book library.
Oh, yes, curated
you're
leadership.
A lot of authors. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, publishing. And then we've got just, you know, the personal renewal genre and CDs and DVDs. Find a lot of stuff on there. And we are a distributor, a wholesale distributor. So if you'd like to get books in bulk, something you see that's not on the site, contact us. And then our speaking and our events and where we're going to be are all up there as well.
That is excellent. So tell people where they can find you. Give us some websites.
Sure. The website is www.tremendousleadership.com, and you can get to there and Tremendous Tracy and all our Facebook links, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, you name it, all that stuff, but tremendousleadership.com. And it'll pull you right up, and you can see our blog and our free webinars and all kinds of great stuff.
Excellent. Well, listen, Tracy, thank you. It's been wonderful chatting with you. I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did. And everybody who is in the chat room, the show will be available for download in about 20 minutes. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Tracy Jones. And happy Veterans Day to everybody. Thank you all who served. I will see you next week.
You can find Denise Griffiths at your office on the web.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.